I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up this week, we'll take a look back at Rafa Benitez's rant against both Chelsea and some of the club's supporters. We'll also look ahead to two massive matches in the Premier League with football expert Daniel Freeman. And Charlie Owens will join us once again to bring us the latest from the racing world. Well, we'll start with football, and I'm joined by football expert Daniel Freeman. And Dan, we'll start with the extraordinary events at the Riverside Stadium in midweek. Chelsea winning 2-0 at Middlesbrough in the FA Cup, but then an amazing rant by Rafa Benitez, the Chelsea boss, against both the club for giving him the title of interim manager and potentially undermining his position, and also some of the fans who Benitez says are counterproductive in their protests against him.
They have to support the team instead of wasting time doing banners or singing songs. What they have to do is to support the team and create a good atmosphere in Stamford Bridge. They put me the title of interim manager. It's a massive mistake. Everyone has to stick together and we can achieve what we want to achieve. That is the Champions League. Simple.
So Rafa clearly not happy. Dan, what did you make of that outburst?
Well, the timing of it was fantastic in the way that you'd only do that sort of thing after you've won a match, wouldn't you? Wouldn't have sounded
and an away game as well.
Yeah. I understand where he's coming from. If the contract that he signed didn't say interim manager, if it just said manager. But the thing is, Chelsea, with previous managers who have only been there for a short period, they have been known as interim manager. So I do think that I don't really know where he's getting that there. I totally agree with the whole thing about the fans. Generally, Chelsea's away record under Benitez has been very good, you know, as good as you can get. But their home form has been average at best. And that can only be down to the fact that, you know, playing at home isn't an advantage for them, while half of their support are concentrating on booing Benitez and not getting behind the team. You know, opposition teams will come there, and it'll be quite a neutral venue for them. So I do understand where he's coming from in that respect. I don't know. I mean, we don't know. We weren't there. We didn't see the contract that he signed, whether it said interim on it or not. Maybe it didn't say interim on the actual contract, but he always knew it was an interim period.
Yeah,
didn't he?
It was clear from the start that, you know, they were calling him interim manager from even before he officially arrived. I think it said on the website, didn't it, originally, that he was named interim manager. I personally think it's an odd term. I think it's an unnecessary term, because the point that he made, actually, Benitez recently, was that every manager is an interim manager to an extent, apart from
that's
obvious
that's
exceptions
fair.
Like Arsene Wenger and Sir Alex Ferguson. So I do think, you know, when players know that a manager's leaving at the end of the season, generally they act up and generally they don't respect his authority. So I think he was in a difficult situation from the very start. Do you expect him to stay now until the end of the season?
I still expect him to stay until the end of the season. I don't see any reason why not. I think it would have been done by now. You know, we're on the eve of the weekend. Surely something would have happened more or less there and then. He may well have not even come back on the bus. He might have taken a right down the M62 back to his home near Liverpool. So I can't see now what would be the point. What's the point in getting rid of him now? Wouldn't you've done it straight away?
Because also you've got a guy there that I do find it odd that he doesn't get more respect in this country, because you've got a guy who's won pretty much everything there is to win. He's won the Champions League, he's won the UEFA Cup, he's won La Liga twice with Valencia against both Barcelona and Real Madrid, not once but twice. So, you know, he's got a great record, but he doesn't ever seem to really get the respect that perhaps he deserves.
No, he doesn't seem to have the relationship with the media that the likes of Roberto Mancini or Jose Mourinho do. And I don't know why that is. Maybe he's just not as charismatic as those two, and that inevitably means that you don't get the media that you'd wish for, and you know it does show itself eventually. Rafa Benitez, as far as I can always, I like the guy. Whenever I see him interviewed, both professionally and, you know, just as a man, he always comes across as a nice, honest guy who's done very well. But unfortunately, he hasn't made probably as many friends as the other two that I've mentioned have. and doesn't get the same press.
Well, what's really interesting is you look at Benitez, and then if we switch to our next game, which is Southampton against QPR, look at Harry Redknapp. Yeah. Redknapp, you know, in terms of achievements, nowhere near what Benitez has achieved in his career, but because he's willing to play the game and because he has an excellent relationship with journalists, he tends to get a rather easier ride. He's not getting an easy ride at Loftus Road at the moment. QPR not making the progress that perhaps some people, including myself, thought they would make. They're still bottom of the table, and they go to a Southampton side who are playing some decent stuff, aren't they, under Mauricio Pochettino?
They have, yes. They went to Manchester United and in one of, I think it was his second game, lost 2-1, but played really, really well, getting applause from Sir Alex Ferguson on the night and generally the football public. And since then, I think they went to Wigan, drew 2-2, but played very well indeed, beat Manchester City at home. Generally, yes, the move at the time caused uproar with Nigel Atkins being sacked for doing nothing wrong. But quite like the way that Newcastle got rid of Chris Hughton and the way that Alan Pardew stepped in, it seems to have been because, you know, they've done even better than they were before. People are starting to accept that maybe these things just have to happen. And a decent start for Pochettino at Southampton, but they come up against a QPR team now who are getting to a point now where they've got nothing to lose in terms of the fact that, you know, they need wins. Draws aren't good enough.
Yeah,
now
absolutely.
They need wins, and it'll be an interesting reception for Harry Redknapp. I don't know if he's been back to Southampton since he left there in 2005. Left the sinking ship, as
no,
it were.
No, maybe he hasn't, because maybe Southampton were out of the league
there
by the
go.
Time he was at Spurs. So, yeah, could well be his first return. I don't think they'll give him a warm reception.
Yeah, what's that, 8 years ago now?
Well, it was Agent Redknapp, wasn't it? He left Portsmouth to go to Southampton, took them down, and then went back to Portsmouth. So I think his status amongst Portsmouth fans probably went up a few levels because of that. I think you're absolutely spot on, by the way, about QPR knowing that they need to start winning, because they're now 7 points adrift of safety. And if they were to lose again and say, you know, Wigan get a victory, then you're looking at a 10-point gap to safety. And then they're probably dead and buried.
All the other teams down at the bottom seem to have been showing some resolve, some fight. You know, Wigan going to Reading themselves, you know, the never say die attitude, you know, it won't get them, it won't help
them
out all the time.
I don't think it'll save
them,
no.
But they're showing some fight,
yeah.
And QPR have still got to go to Reading in the league later on in the season. Aston Villa in recent weeks have shown some decent fight, I think. And you know, the sort of the limelight has moved a bit off Paul Lambert in recent weeks, giving him a bit of a breather, and they're starting to get things relatively sorted. Their big game for them next week at Reading. So, for QPR, and they're going to have a massive debt as well, dropping into the Championship. I'd be amazed now if they stay up. It really would be the biggest achievement I think Harry Redknapp's ever achieved if he does keep QPR up. But I can't see it, and you know that they've got no one to blame but themselves for bringing players in on a bit of a whim, playing them massive wages.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking a huge, huge gamble.
Well, let's finish this section of the podcast by having a look at the game of the week, you know, unquestionably, which is Arsenal making the trip, the short trip to North London rival Spurs. Spurs with a magnificent 3-2 win at West Ham on Monday, a game that I had the privilege of commentating on. And even though Spurs were under pressure for big, big parts of that game, they found a way to win, and Gareth Bale with two excellent goals and an assist, and the winner in stoppage time was just breathtaking, wasn't it?
Yeah, I saw Spurs against Lyon a couple of weeks ago, and was lucky enough to witness both of the free kicks in that game. And you know, in that game, yes, I think you could say it was more or less a one man show, because Spurs were average at best, I thought, at home against Lyon. But at West Ham on Monday night, there was one or two players out on that pitch that I thought, you know, really, really good for Spurs. And they've got the makings now of a team who deserve to be challenging for maybe third, even second. You know, they're only 5 points behind Manchester City, and the sort of form that they're in at the moment, Spurs, you know, you wouldn't back against them not finishing maybe second. This, for me, is it's probably a must-not-lose game for Spurs. I think a draw they'd be not happy with, but content with.
Well, they'd maintain that 4-point gap, wouldn't they? Which is
and
big.
Arsenal need to go there and win. Simple as that. And, you know, I think if you look at it now, how many Tottenham players would get into the Arsenal team. Well, probably the majority. How many Arsenal players would get into the Tottenham team? Two, maybe three, something like that. And that's a major switch from even as little ago as maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because Gareth Bale, obviously, in the run-up to the West Ham game, said that he felt the Spurs squad had now moved beyond the Arsenal squad in terms of quality. So it's not just a question of, we always used to level the kind of mental side of the game at Arsenal and say they were a bit of a soft touch. But now, do you think there's a quality gap as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at the two goalkeepers, okay, you could probably, you'd have both of the Spurs goalkeepers in ahead of Szczesny on current form at the moment. I think Szczesny is a good goalkeeper. He's just going through a bad spell, having a bad season. But at the moment, you'd have Lloris and Friedel, wouldn't you, in the Arsenal team? At the back, you know, Spurs have got a wealth of quality at centre-half. I think people have underestimated the job that they've done there in terms of bringing Vertonghen in and obviously Dawson staying around.
And Kolker's come through as
well. Kolker's come through this season. He needed to, because Ledley King obviously retired at right back. They've got two, you know, quality right backs in Kyle Walker and Kyle Norton, who's been moving to left back. Benoit Assou-Ekotto hasn't had the most fluent season because he's had a couple of injuries, but Vertonghen's obviously stepped in there as well. And yeah, the likes of Jake Livermore and Tom Carroll coming on, and they finished the game at West Ham on Monday night, and they finished the game against Lyon away in France.
They're good
as
options
well
to have, they're aren't good, they? Just to stiffen that midfield when you need to.
They're plenty of running, and I don't want to fall flat on my face with this, but I think this is the best Tottenham squad that they've had. You know, you consider they lost Modric and they lost Van der Vaart. Well, at the moment, I know at the start of the season it took a while to get going, but at the moment they seem to have sort of almost moved up a level. They've moved on, which is all credit to Andre Villas-Boas. Had his knockers aplenty, and showing now the coach that we all thought he would become in the Premier League.
Well, now it's time to switch our attention to racing, and the burning question is, Charlie Owens, what on earth happened to last week's hot tip, Wick Hill?
Yeah, fair play, Kev. And Wickhill finished 12th in the Racing Plus Chase at Kempton. He certainly failed to live up to my billing for him, but there was a valid reason. At the first fence, he was kicked in the hind leg by a falling horse called Mr. Hyde. It opened up a gash that required 8 stitches and 14 staples to repair. He'll live to fight another day, and I wouldn't ride him off just yet when it comes to the Grand National. Now, the Cheltenham Festival kicks off a week on Tuesday, and you can really feel the buzz of anticipation growing. Over the 4 days of the festival, there are 27 races. 16 of them are championship events, and as a rule of thumb, this means that each horse in the race must carry the same burden. Now, that's the combined weight of jockey plus saddle. The idea being that you genuinely find out who the best horse over that distance is, and they are crowned champions. Now, the handicaps, well, they're a different beast. They are typically made up of horses that just fall short of championship standard. Now, every horse is given a numerical rating, which is an expression of their ability. And in a handicap, those of a higher ability, and therefore a higher rating, will be given a heavier weight than those that have a lower rating. The idea is that the better horses will carry sufficient weight to slow them down so that the lower rated horses have an equal chance of winning. We'll look at the championships races next week, but as the weights for the handicaps at this year's festival were published on Tuesday, it seems prudent to use this week's podcast to give them the once over. Now, what I look out for in a handicap is a horse who acts on the track, handles the distance, and who's still improving, and therefore carrying a lower weight than he should be. Now, on the Tuesday on the 11th of March, which is the first day of the festival, there's a race called the JLT Handicap, and in that race there's a horse called Armic, and he fits my bill. He was third in this very race last year and is set to run off virtually the same rating as then. He's only run once this season, and he was putting in a fine effort then when I'm seating 3 from home. And his trainer, Donald McCain, happily admits that this race has been his target since last year's placed effort.
Oh, after the race that day, we've concentrated on coming here fresh and well, you know, so I'd expect him to run a big race. He'd be somewhere near the top of the handicappers, yeah.
Well, Armic has a very similar profile to Ben Salem, who won the race 2 years ago, and I think he's a cracking each-way value around 8-1. Also on the opening day, the Tuesday, there's a novice handicap chase at 5:15. And in this race, I'm really sweet on the chances of a horse called Carlito Briganti, especially if the ground continues to dry out. He won the Coral Hurdle 2 years ago off a rating of 155, while as a novice chaser, he gets to run off a mark of just 137. So if he's as good over fences as he was as a hurdler, then he must be handicapped to run a very big race. Well, that's how I see it, and so does his trainer, Gordon Elliott.
He seems to be a different horse around Cheltenham than he is anywhere else. He loves the place. I think he's won two or three there now for us. I think we'll go for the novice handicap. He's only rated 137 over fences, 15 or 20 pounds better off in over fences than he is over hurdles. So he'll be one we'll be looking forward to, and hopefully the ground isn't too bad. The better the ground, the better he is, but we're very happy with him and he's a great nick.
Carlito Briganti is also an 8-1 chance, and I think his trainer Gordon Elliott is one of the shrewdest men around. So watch out for that one. Well, they're just a couple of races we've looked at, but hopefully that will give you a little bit of the flavour of the excitement and intrigue that can be thrown up when you start analysing handicaps.
Well, that's it for this week. From Daniel, Charlie and myself, Kevin Hatchard, it's goodbye for now.